Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
The over-under.
Here's John Williams.
Today is three. I'm going with three big thoughts today. This is John. It's 107. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We sure appreciate you tuning in. Wow, what a nice day, huh? Monday is beautiful. Too bad the weekend wasn't that way, but this isn't a bad Monday. On the one. As I told Steve Bertrand a little while ago, I have been carrying around Diane Lake's book, Member of the Family, My Story of Charles Manson, Life Inside His Cult in the Darkness that Ended the 60s. All of my producer was really hot to do this book. She goes, oh, we should do this. This is fascinating. I said, it was fascinating. It is fascinating, but I just don't see a reason to do it other than this woman has come out and told her story. It's just something that never captured me. I wasn't living through that age as much as other people, so I was passing on it. I was reading through it, though, and the more I read it, the better I thought the book was, and I thought, oh, maybe we should just do it for its own sake. Let her tell her story. Charlie Manson passed away today at the age of 83. It was actually yesterday, and because of that, I said, all right, let's give her a call. Just before the show, we were able to reach her. She can't join us live, but that conversation will play back for you at 1:30. Where will you be after our 1:30 news? We'll talk with Diane Lake. Her book is Member of the Family. And if you wonder, how can something like this happen? How can a crazy guy like Charlie Manson attract a group of following and then pull something like that off? I mean, get people to do that. She answers that book in the book and in our conversation. New York Times says one of the most notorious murderers of the 20th century, very likely the most culturally persistent and perhaps almost the most inscrutable, died Sunday, yesterday, Kern County, California, 83, natural causes. Spent most of his life behind bars. He was a semi-literate, habitual criminal and failed musician before he came to irrevocable attention in the late 1960s. As the wild-eyed leader of the Manson family, a murderous band of young drifters in California. Convicted of 9 murders in all, Mr. Manson was known in particular for the 7 brutal killings collectively called the Tate-LaBianca murders, committed by his followers on 2 consecutive August nights in 1969. The most famous of the victims was Sharon Tate, an actress who was married to the film director Roman Polanski, 8.5 months pregnant. She was killed with 4 other people at her Benedict Canyon home. To a frightened, mesmerized public, the murders, with their undercurrents of sex, drugs, and rock and roll and Satanism, seemed the depraved, logical extension of the anti-establishment, do-your-own-thing ethos that helped define the 60s. Also the subject of many books, most famously Helter Skelter by Vincent Bugliosi. He was the lead prosecutor and the Tate-LaBianca murder trial. Throughout the decades since, Mr. Manson has remained an enigma. Was he a paranoid schizophrenic? Was he a sociopath devoid of human feeling? Was he a charismatic guru, as his followers once believed? Or was he simply flotsam, a man whose life, the New York Times wrote in 1970, stands as a monument to parental neglect and the failure of the public correctional system? Charlie Manson, dead at the age of 83. And I will tell you what our guest says at the very end of the interview. She says, well, if nothing else, this gives those families one less parole hearing to go to. You want closure? That's part of that process. I was at the, do we call it the DMV here in Illinois? I was at the Secretary of State's office getting my driver's license renewed. It had expired. It was a Minnesota license. So for the last couple of weeks, I've been driving around with something that until only recently somebody pointed out to me, hey, your license expired from out of state. I went, oh, crap, I got to get that done. That's the hardest thing in the world to do. Get yourself motivated to take half a day and go get your driver's license renewed. And I came away with this feeling. We need to find a way to make the jobs for the people at the Secretary of State's driver's license facilities more interesting. We need to find a way to make their lives, their work, more interesting, more pleasant, because no one there seems to enjoy their jobs. And they rotate shifts, too, I think, to break the monotony. For instance, I noticed the woman who checked my ID when I came in was also the woman who, at a different window now, gave me my test. And she generally had the same disposition as all of the women I worked with today. She seemed to be so disappointed in me that I was even there seemed to make her exasperated. As if we had talked about this before, John, and you're still coming here? She asked for my Social Security card, which I didn't have. You don't have your Social Security card? She said, like we'd been over this 1,000 times before. And I said, no, the guy over there said I didn't need to have it. I had my passport and I had my expired license and I had my insurance card and I had a dental bill, things with my address. I had all kinds of things. My Charlie Corpuscle blood donor card, my lapsed 1982 moral majority card.
Didn't she look at the detail? Oh, John, you don't floss?
I know. She goes, well, you've had a lot of cavities. I'm like, I know. They go, yeah, we really don't take dental bills. I said, all right, I just like grab. I started grabbing stuff. You know, I was going to bring Bingo and Daisy.
I was going to say, here's my dog.
He said, look, watch this. They'll bark at me. See, those are my dogs. So we go through all of that. And she seemed to be so unhappy among her job. And you could have predicted it was going to be like this. I don't think I'm singularly mad at her or even mad at her at all. I think I'm mad at the system. What is it? What does the Secretary of State's office do to these poor people that makes them forget that they're public servants and that, I mean, they must know that we're all a little anxious or apprehensive. You know, we've already taken time out of our work or our lives
to go
do this.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So no one wants to be there. Right. So that's got to kind of rub off on them a little. Although 16-year-olds want to be there.
Really, there's lots of moms and dads and kids. And to the person, we're all a little anxious. Like I knew I had to take the written test again. I'm like, oh, is it 500 feet or 250 feet I have to stop before a rail crossing? And the yellow triangular sign, if they don't put the words on it, do I know what kind of sign that is? And Steve, if when merging is the best option to A, slow down and let the car and that's trying to merge find a space, or should you move over to the left lane automatically?
I don't know. I just drive. I just get in the car and then look at my iPod. That's what I do. You know, my iPhone. That's what we do.
So, you know, I was a little apprehensive about that. And then she asked me this question. You ready?
Yeah.
You or anybody that you know have ever come to that?
No, ma'am.
And I said, I'm sorry. God, I hate this about me, but I didn't get that. Boy, oh boy. That was not what she wanted to hear. And I know my hearing's not great, but I could hear a lot of other people around me. But she just wasn't having what we're calling an articulation day. She didn't. And so finally she did it again. And I went, oh, boy, I don't know what you said. And then she starts to treat me like a moron. And I start to act more moronic because then you start to like lose your confidence. You're like, oh, no, I'm failing right here at the counter. I just want to get a driver's license. And I don't know what she's saying. And she's going to be angry. And she's going to put a big red X on my paper. And so then you start to act apprehensive. And so now you're acting even dumber than you were when you got in. I'm talking to myself right now. She said, all right, here's what we're going to do. After two failed attempts to understand what she was saying, could have been my ears, could have been her enthusiasm. She turns the page around and goes, you answer the questions. One of the questions was, has your license been revoked? Well, my license had expired, but I didn't know if that meant revoked. I also knew that my asking her about the definition of revoked was not a good idea. So I put no down, knowing full well that I did have a lapsed driver's license. I put an N, actually. And then she says, no, you got to spell it out. Not certain that I would know how to spell no. So I put no, no, yes, no. I answered all the questions, gave it back to her. And then she said, all right, just get over there. Let's get over there. So I got over there. But then, like, I'm like over there, and I know when I don't know what I'm doing. I'm really good about that. And I've got to the point now I'm pretty good about fixing it, even though it causes angst amongst members of my family, including Daisy and Bingo. But I said, okay, and when I get over there, what am I going to do? Because I didn't know what over there was. She goes, well, you're going to take the test. Ah, okay, okay. So then I took the test. Here's another thing they should do at the driver's license facility, Steve. Are you writing all of this down? Because I'm trying to fix a problem.
The thing is, I think we all know exactly what you're saying. You know what I mean? It's not a stretch for any of us to follow along at all.
I got three of them wrong.
Mm.
And they didn't tell me what the three were or what the right answers were. I think they should relay that information to me.
It should be a teaching moment.
I know, because there's two kinds of questions on the driver's license test. They're the real easy questions like, if your car catches fire, should you A, get out of the vehicle and alert authorities, or B, contact Megan? So I put down A for that one. But then some of them are a little more difficult, like, if your vehicle begins to hydroplane, what should you do? And I thought a lot of the things they were suggesting were pretty good ideas. I got that one wrong, and now I don't know which is the right answer.
Reach for the oxygen mask.
So seriously, in fact, if they only did something after the test, it should be tell you the correct answers to the things you don't know.
Right.
That's the only purpose of the test would be to find out what I don't know and then tell me.
Mr. Williams, you passed, but you have to color in these dots by the right answers.
If that was it, I would. By the time I turned in my test, I was almost ready to just put my hands up and go, you know what? I'm not even qualified. I shouldn't be here. I have no business driving a vehicle.
Let me give mine to a 98-year-old.
Oh, I know. Well, so my mom and dad are going through this. Well, as it turns out, they're older than me. And I think, oh, my God, if you were a senior citizen or new to this country or had other barriers to your ability to pass the test, I can just imagine how much anxiety you have.
So back to your question, why is it?
I don't know. And I'll tell you something else, Steve. Some of the people there, and it was just today, really, I have just such a micro snapshot of their world via my experience. But the women all had attitude, and the men were pretty pleasant and engaging. They knew that we were morons, and we were going to get dumber while we were there. The ladies had no hope for us. They were just, sir, I said step over here. I go, okay. I mean, people were actually...
Oh, yeah, that's the place to do with the line. Don't step in front of the line.
I know.
Right? I forgot about that.
I'm telling you, people are walking on eggshells. They're like, oh, God, oh, gee, I'm so old.
Like, it's your turn next, but until you're summoned to the counter, don't step across.
I think the only reason I got my license... I know.
I got yelled at that for one time.
Yes, that happened to somebody today.
And it's like, well, I'm next. There's no one. It's just 3 feet away. I'm just stepping up. I'll be ready.
There was some issue with somebody's documentation, and they said, sir, and so he came to approach the person that said that, but he crossed a line that only Secretary of State's people can be on the side of. And he goes, and they all just like freaked out, like, he's got a gun. And so then he goes, no. If you're over here, you get a paycheck. You don't get a paycheck. So you have to go back. And I thought, well, that's kind of, that's a fun way to put it. So then we all figured it out. So then you get to the driver's license photo place. And it'd be nice, Steve, if the woman working the camera knew that, like, she does this every day for 20 years. We do this once in a very rare while. So I know it's no big deal to her, but every time we show our driver's license to somebody, it's going to be that picture looking back at yourself. So you'd like a chance to just, I don't know, is there a mirror? Could I fix my hair? When is the thing going to go off? She spoke something that I'm pretty sure was English in my direction, and then a light went off. And that's my ID.
Well, I hope you'll show it to us.
Well, I will when I get it. So then they give you, and here's another thing.
Oh, yeah, it's a temporary thing now.
What's the deal? After all of that.
Because they send it in to get some super tamper-proof stuff
on it. Okay. Yeah, because I've got a temporary one now. So that's gonna work for me for a while. But you're right, Steve. I don't know what the answer to my first question is.
I mean, if you worked at a place where no one wanted to be, yeah, that would bring you down a little bit.
I don't know. My dentist, the Dr. Bellis and his staff are the nicest people. They are the nicest people. Nobody wants to go to the dentist.
Not even Dr. Bellis?
I met a proctologist, seemed to have a good day every day. I don't know what other jobs are that you know that the people coming in the door don't want to be there. But
maybe it's the slightly dimmed fluorescent lighting.
I know. Hey, listen, I think their work environment is terrible. It's dirty. They don't have a private area. They have a little coffee break behind a partition that's crappy. So maybe we need to spend a little more money on getting them an exercise room, some brighter lights, you know.
Some watercolors.
I know.
Puppy pictures.
I know, because really, if that was the private sector and those are your frontline employees with whom the public interacts, you would go, wow, these people are going to move to Indiana. We're going to lose customers. This is not a positive, what do they call it, interface.
Secretary White's a very positive guy.
That's a funny thing, too. Yeah. He's the most positive public official we've ever had. Just ask him.
No, he is.
Okay, it's 122. My number is 312-981-7200. If you have any idea for, like, let's make this a helping thing. How can we help them help us? Hey, King John, I had to do a correction to my car title. It took 4 visits to fix 4 different answers every time. I kept smiling. It's fixed now. Hey, John, I tried so hard to be nice and was treated like crap, except by one person. I asked her about her accent. She was a transplant from Eastern Europe and seemed thrilled to be working at the DMV in Rockford, Illinois. Hey, King John, go to the one in Woodstock. They are the happiest, quickest group, painless. Signed, Louise. Thanks, Louise. Thanks, everybody. 312-981-7200. For years, a legendary employee in Peoria, Illinois, was the guy at the, I forget the exact location, but he was the guy in Peoria where you went to get your driver's license renewed. And his job for years was taking pictures. And he was one of these guys. Hey, come here, beautiful. Sit down. Oh, you are having a good day. This is going to be the best picture I am ever going to take. And then he'd get the picture. He'd call it out and he'd go, oh, Rosa, you're going to like this. And Rosa would come up and get her picture. He'd go, look at that. That's gorgeous. And that guy did that 8 hours a day, every day for years. You can be that guy. The Bulls' battle Lonzo Ball and the Lakers is done. Looks to give the crowd something else to talk about. Bulls-Lakers, Tuesday at 9:30 on WGNT. Hi, everybody. I'm a part-time announcer. I also work for the DMV. MJ Miller Company is revolutionizing the way you shop for diamonds. Get some diamonds. They're really pretty. Go get some diamonds at MJ Miller. What do you want, diamonds? Go get some diamonds. You don't want diamonds? Get out of here. MJ Miller & Company, diamond store. See, that's not going to sell any diamonds. MJ Miller & Company is revolutionizing the way you buy them. Imagine the most dazzling crystals chosen specifically for their brilliance. And now imagine a free app that allows you to capture and magnify a 360-degree image of each stone. That's what they have on MJ Miller's site. And if you're not real good about that yet, walk into the store. They'll show you how to do it. But it does allow you to admire them at home before you purchase the gems. And the diamonds we're talking about are absolutely gorgeous. They carry a line of diamonds now called GN Diamonds. MJ Miller is one of only 2 jewelers in the state to carry GN diamonds. Has nothing to do with us, but that's how you'll remember it when you walk in. Shopping for diamonds has never been more interactive with the app or more fun with these brilliant stones. Visit them to learn about the difference at MJ Miller & Company. They are in downtown Barrington. I believe I recall correctly, their address is 123 West Main Street. Joanne, this is John. You're on WGN. What can you do for us?
John, I was thinking about, I wonder how the customers and the employees, the men, treat the women. I mean, are the men as condescending? Are they condescending to the women particularly? And maybe they're just used to that, and so they're defensive? I mean, maybe.
You're speaking about the women generally because the men are so condescending to them?
Right, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, especially, I mean, I find that with older women that sometimes people in general can be condescending.
Oh, sure. And I don't know if it's an ethnic issue or a race issue, because there's a lot of, because everybody is there, but almost all of the people that were working there were African American. And I don't know what's going on. I would love to have a psychologist just sit at the DMV at the Secretary of State's office for a month and see what's going on there and why, and what can be done to make it better? You know, how do you improve that environment for those people? Because they're not happy.
Well, I was listening to what you said, and then I thought about people that were in bad moods when I've approached them. And to lighten it up, depending on the mood that I'm in,
yeah,
I'll ask them how to pronounce their name, or I'll just try it. I mean, anything to engage them and make it more personal.
Yeah.
So I'm not making it all about me asking all these questions, and sometimes that softens it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's worth a try. It's a nice thought. They do say if you want to get somebody to open up, ask them about themselves. Thanks for the call, Joanne. Ella says we got to take a break. All our lines are busy, but like Steve said, you know the drill. Text your suggestions to 312-981-7200. After the news, we'll visit with Diane Lake. Her book is about her experience as a member of the Manson family on WGN. Thank you, Steve. 139. WGN, this is John Williams. Charlie Manson dies at the age of 83 of natural causes. As we read from the New York Times the other day, he spent most of his life in prison, not capitally punished, obviously. He died in jail. Now here is Diane Lake. Her book is Member of the Family, My Story of Charles Manson, Life Inside His Cult and the Darkness That Ended the 60s. I had been reading the book, wasn't sure I was going to talk to her. Charlie Manson died, and immediately we called her, but in the throwing the interview together today to try and get her to come on with us, she couldn't come on live. She was able to join me via cell phone. There's a little bit of hiss in the line, but I think you will appreciate what she had to say. I asked her to start about why she wrote the book.
It helped me with closure. It helped me integrate, you know, that 14 to 16-year-old with my 64-year-old self.
I can imagine. So just tell me about how you fell into the Manson family.
My parents had dropped out and joined the counterculture and joined a commune where I didn't really fit in. And I met Charlie and the girls at a party and felt loved and adored immediately.
That's interesting, though, that you would have been independent enough to be able to do that. What did your parents say when you didn't want to live with them at their commune but go with this other group?
They had actually previously given me my emancipation as a minor, just by writing a note. It wasn't anything official, but they did write a note, and I had asked them to live on my own. I was going to move in with this other couple.
A lot of us have that impulse when we're 14. You said you were 14 years old?
Yes.
A lot of us have that impulse when we're 14, and then our parents either don't say yes, or if they do, we immediately regret it because we're scared and we didn't mean it. We want to stay with our family.
That wasn't the situation. I mean, they were, you know, they had dropped out. You know, there were five of us living in a bread truck, and, it, you know, that was a little tight. The counterculture really was not designed for sexually active underage females.
I don't know what you mean by that.
I was jailbait. Young men coming up to the commune were at risk, or the whole commune was at risk for getting the wrong reputation.
But you're speaking about the commune that your parents were living at, and since your existence there would have been maybe perilous to the sort of culture or the law, they said, let's just get her out of here and she can go live with Charlie Manson and them.
They didn't kick me out, but I just didn't, you know, when I compared the two choices, I didn't feel like I belonged, and my parents were at a point in their, commune existence or whatever, and they'd already given me my freedom. So, you know, they didn't really think of me as their daughter anymore as much as I was just, you know, another member of a commune.
What year was this?
67.
And you're 14 years old at that time. So when you started, it was small, just the seven of you then, huh?
Right.
How many years were you with the commune? How many years were you with the Manson family?
Two.
What was it like? What do you remember about those 2 years generally?
Well, the first year was spent traveling. We went to San Francisco, Las Vegas, New Mexico. We had, we took acid, we smoked pot, took care of babies, you know, did the washing, got clothes, or, you know, washed clothes, learned how to go dumpster diving and prepare food, you know, for the members of the family. I learned how to drive. But then things started getting, Charlie started thinking about the whole race war, which he talked about from the beginning, but it got more serious about a year in.
Did you like Charlie Manson? What was he like?
When I first met him, he was charming, kind of impish, very playful, funny, you know, sang fun songs. He was entirely different, but that was maybe part of the con. He was very good at reading what people's needs were and then, you know, stepping into that personality that, or that persona.
Yeah.
That, and, you know, I was kind of disenfranchised, and he took me under his wing, and, you know, the girls too.
When you said that some of the responsibilities when you were there were taking care of the babies, laundry, et cetera, whose babies? Was he fathering the children, or were these women pregnant by other people?
The first baby born in the family was Mary Bruner's baby, and yes, that one was fathered by Charles.
Is that the one that was born Breech?
Yes.
And you described the scene. It's not funny. It's fantastic. You described the scene where you guys didn't go to a hospital. You had it there at wherever you were living at the time, right?
Yes.
So they say, well, this one woman is a nurse, or maybe she was a midwife, and so
yeah, she's like lived down the block.
Yeah. So they found somebody, and she helped deliver the baby there, and then they rinse it off, and you're good to go.
Pretty much.
And that wasn't a little terrifying to you?
It was exciting, you know? It was exciting, but then we were all a little scared, you know, about the breach, but then, you know, someone turned up who had an idea of what to do.
Well, wasn't he always sort of saying that a miracle will happen or that I'll provide? He was...
Yes.
Everybody, of course, focuses on Charlie Manson, dead now at the age of 83, with the August 69 wave of violence that took the lives of seven people. Where were you when all of that happened?
I was at Spahn Ranch.
Did you know what was going to happen? You did not participate in the murders?
I did not participate. I did not know that they had a plan, or if there was a plan. I didn't find out about the murders until... Tex told me when we were on the way to Death Valley.
What did he tell you?
He had a newspaper and with the headlines, Tate LaBianca, and he slapped the paper and said, you know, told me, I did this. Charlie told me to.
What was your reaction to that?
I was frightened, and I didn't feel like I was in a position to get away. If I did try to get away, then I was at risk for being killed. And now I knew that he was capable of doing that.
Well, were you surprised to discover all of a sudden that these people were that angry, that violent, and that capable of something like that?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, we had been learning about, you know, how to, what I thought was, defend ourselves, you know, against people that might hurt us in this race war, helter-skelter. But I did not envision us being the offenders. It was pretty disturbing.
Did they say why they did it?
Charlie told them to.
Did Charlie ever say what his reason was?
No, not to me.
So what happened to you in your life after that fact?
I was made a ward of the court. I spent 9 months in a state mental hospital, which was a really, you know, my memories of that are very good, and helped normalize my life. And then I was taken in by my arresting officer as his foster child, and I stayed with him for a year until I turned 18.
Your arresting officer became your foster parent?
Yes.
What did you think of that, or what does the world think of that?
They think it's amazing.
And good, I guess. I mean, it strikes me as here you were a person whose father said, well, you don't have to live with me. You latch onto a Charlie Manson father type figure. And now the arresting officer becomes the new father figure for you. I'm a 10-cent psychiatrist. Do you see what I'm doing here? And and he fills that void. Is there something to that?
Yes.
I'll go get a degree. But that was a good, healthy, positive relationship for you as you were sort of decompressing and normalizing, huh?
Yes, yes. Yeah. He was, you know, he saw something worth saving in me, which was, you know, made me feel good.
So then what happens after that, Diane? I mean, what became of your life? Did you get married? Did you have kids? Did you find work?
I went to college, and then I met someone and went to Europe for 2 years.
How often do you hide the fact of your past, or how forward?
Oh, yes, I did, except for, you know, like my pastors and a few, you know, close friends. But other than that, and my husband, no one knew.
Well, was
until now.
I mean, are they literally discovering by the publication of the book about that?
Yes.
And your friends are shocked and amazed that you are one of those people, huh?
Yes, they are. But they are more amazed at my resilience and my the fact that I've been able to overcome and prevail.
Any last thing you want to say about Charlie Manson today?
I think that in light of his death yesterday, that there is a great amount of closure and relief, and I'm happy that the victims' families will have just one less parole
hearing to go to.
Yeah. Right. And maybe it'll give them some closure and some relief as well.
It's Diane Lake. And the name of the book is Member of the Family, My Story of Charles Manson. It's just out. Sam Panionovich joins us from WGN Sports. Hi, Sam.
Hey, John.
You pick 5 NFL games each weekend. How did you do?
3-2. I took those bum Bears, though, and they blew it. They blew a 17-7 lead.
What was the margin? What were you getting?
+2.5. They lost by 3.
Those people in Las Vegas know what they're doing, don't they?
Right. Well, it was 3 pretty much everywhere else, but the contest lines are set. You know, they don't move. So it came 2.5, and I thought it was fishy. Everybody was saying it was going to be an easy win for the Lions, and I always thought that, you know, coming into this game, Detroit playing in Chicago, they're not really strong in Chicago for some reason. They went down 17-7, but old man River John Fox found a way to screw it up.
Should they have gotten rid of their field goal kicker, Sam?
I get whatever. I mean, he missed 5 kicks last year. He missed 5 this year. You know what's ironic? They cut Robbie Gould, their all-time leading field goal man, last year, like a week before the season. Last year he was 10 for 10. This year he's 19 for 21.
He's still
so they cut him,
wow.
And he's been awesome. And the guy they brought in has been a bum. So I guess it's karma.
I think it's most field. I don't think that physically there's a great difference between field goal kickers. I think it's mentally, it's organizational, it's support, it's comfort. It's in their heads whether or not they're successful, not in their groin. And if he's not getting it done here, maybe get rid of him. But I hate to see that happen. I'm a former field goal kicker, Sam.
I know. You were good, though, too. I mean, you could probably kick for the Bears.
Yeah, it's...
Those both can't be true.
I know. The first thing is not true, and the second thing kind of is. And John Fox deserves all the criticism he's getting, Sam?
Oh, of course. I mean, you can't have a 10-point lead and blow it. And then the clock management at the end, you know, he just bungled. He bungled the lead, first of all. You lose a 10-point lead at home, and then the clock management late. You didn't use any of your timeouts. And you needed a rookie quarterback to make a hell of a drive. I'll actually give Mitch Trubisky a lot of credit. They got the ball back with like 1:30 to go, down by 3 with a rookie quarterback. Most rookies would, you know, would mess that up. But he got him in position. He got him in position to kick a field goal, and Connor Barth missed it. And then he gets cut. I also like the way Trubisky bounced back. It was 24-17, about 8 minutes left to go in the fourth, and he drove him down the field for a touchdown. This kid is showing his poise, and a big run on fourth, and I think 4th and 13, he ran for 14. He looks good. His stats were actually not bad again. No interceptions, no fumbles. He did throw a touchdown, so he's getting better. But good teams find a way to win. Bad teams find a way to lose. That's how it goes.
So are you optimistic at all about the future? Like, a couple of our running backs seem to be pretty good to me, and hey, we're going to get a new field goal kicker, and our quarterback seems to be pretty good. Are you looking forward to next year by any chance?
Yeah, I'm optimistic. I like the defense. I think you've got a quarterback that's going to be a pretty good player in the league. The running backs can play. I agree with Cohen. I agree with Howard. The line looks to be okay on offense, but you need guys that can catch the football. You need receivers, and they didn't have any coming into this year. That goes on the blame of Ryan Pace, the GM. You know, you have to have guys that can help your rookie quarterback, put him in a position to succeed. And they thought coming into this year that, you know, Kevin White and Cameron Meredith would be viable. Well, both of them are hurt. They're on the shelf. So you're using backup scraps at receiver, and it shows. So you need to find a way to either draft a receiver or sign some guys in free agency. But I am optimistic because I think you do have building blocks for the future, for sure. But you need a new coach. You need a coach. There's no doubt about it. We've talked about this all year. The guy just doesn't have it. He doesn't get them ready to play. They're not prepared, and it shows.
One last thing. I just got about 20 seconds. Northwestern football and basketball over the weekend. That was as fun a call Dave Ennett's done with Ted Albrecht in a long time. The team played well, and it was senior day, and it was just such a nice moment for everybody getting in the game. The basketball team, meanwhile, a ranked team, should not lose by almost 40 points.
No, they should not, and that's going to happen early in the season. I think they're a little bit overseeded, but that's fine. They'll even out over the year. And then the football team, yeah, 6 wins in a row. They're going to get close to a New Year's Day bowl, maybe December 29th or 30th. I think they're going to play either like LSU or Stanford. Those are the projections.
Yeah.
And how about Justin Jackson, the running back? Only 2 running backs in Big Ten history with 5,000 yards.
He had 1,000 yards every year, right?
Yep, 5,000 total, him and Ron Dane. Him and Ron Dane are the only ones that have done it 4 years in a row, 1,000 yards. That's pretty impressive.
You're pretty impressive, Sam. I will talk to you on Saturday. We do a show on Saturday, my friend.
You got it.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
All right, here we go. That's Ward. All right, I'm trying to do a radio show. Now I got to turn on the outside microphone. Hello, Beth Swerk.
Hi, John Williams.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Jenny used to work at WGN Radio. I don't know who the other gal is. What is your name? Beth Swerk is standing outside our showcase studio. I just texted you. I'm at a dentist tomorrow. I can't have coffee.
I know. We'll reschedule. It's all good.
Well, let's talk on the phone because we will spend all the entire time you're here in the state texting back and forth trying to set something up. Let's just talk on the phone.
Okay, sounds like a plan.
The phone is a little thing you carry around in your pocket.
I'll do that after I go to the bank. I'll call you.
Patty Vasquez, say hello to my old producer, Beth Swerk.
Hi, Beth. How you doing?
Hi, Patty. Hello. Good.
I'm watching John push these buttons. I don't know how to use these at night, so I'm learning a lot right now.
The sun's out. It's like, what's happening?
Beth makes fun of me because she's so tapped into the modern thing. She doesn't go to a bank. She, like, deposits her check just by sticking it in a hole in a wall.
You can take a picture of it.
And I go, no, I'm walking my check into the bank and saying hello to the nice people there.
Surely, yeah.
And Beth thinks that is so Neanderthal. Not the word. It's just old-fashioned.
I mean, I thought that like 6 years ago.
I know, you really did. All right, I will talk to you later.
All right, love you.
You look good. Nice
love
to see you,
show.
Beth. Hi, Jenny.
Bye.
I do the same thing, John. But the thing is, I'll have checks and I'll wait too long to go in. I want to see a person. I like handing my checks over to a human being.
I do too. And they say, no, it's just great.
You mean like being mugged?
No, I mean, not against my will.
I think that not only is that give some of us who are over a certain age, and that's the case. You're much younger than me, and I don't know what that line is. Beth's in her mid-30s. I'm not sure how. Say Beth's 34. So she's on the south side of that line. I'm on the north side of that line.
I'm in the middle somewhere.
There's a line, and if you're on my side of it, and you have a check, and it's for more than $73, you want to hand it to somebody and then get a receipt and all that
stuff. Yes. I don't understand the whole photographing it. I don't know how that works. Why?
You take a picture of it, and then you hit send, and somehow the money appears in your account. And they're all cool with that. And I'm like, I'm not. So Beth would once in a while see me run an errand, and she just like, you know, did we pull up in your Edsel, John? And did you first make a phone call on a hello, Lois? Could you ring the bank for me? She makes fun of me that way. Patty Vasquez is in the studio. Hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you doing?
What time do you go to work tonight?
I go to work I'm going to be at Zany's tonight. So I start at 8:30 tonight at the Zany's on Wells in Old Town, and then I'll come here right after that and be here by about 10:15 for my 11 p.m. show.
How often do you do that, a double like that?
It depends. I mean, I was doing it every month. We were having a funny female showcase every month, an all-women's show that I've hosted for over 8 years. And what a bad time to end that run.
I know.
Of all times.
Well, I don't know. Would you like to be on stage with that as the umbrella right now or not?
Yeah, tonight would have been. I mean, this is actually the night we would be doing it, the third Monday of every month. And I think that one of the great things about doing that show was that it did take us out of that. It's like going to, you know, being able to not worry about the fact that, oh, here's a woman on stage. You knew that every comic on stage is a woman. So I'm trying to see if I can bring that back.
But is there some of that? Do audiences want to see men more than women?
Yeah.
Automatically?
I think it's, well, I don't know if they want to. I think that's just what they're accustomed to. They're used to it more.
And so now they've got like, oh, well, this is the B team if I'm watching a lady. I mean, is that the disposition?
Yeah. Well, the comics who bring us up, they'll say, are you ready for something different? Are you ready for a lady comic? You know, the lovely. It's very strange. Well, you've talked about using
don't
the word lovely.
Do you hate that?
It's very strange. Well, I've had comics go into even worse detail. And I do mean worse, because it's like that has nothing to do with my material that I'm about to do. And I made the mistake once of asking an MC. It was for the HBO, the TBS Just for Laughs Fest. I said, could you do me a favor and not say anything about the way I look? And he took it as, oh, she thinks she's pretty. He didn't have my 15 years of experience of I really cringe when people say she's cute or she's pretty. It happens every single time. So he went on stage. He goes, all right, everybody, this girl is messed up in the face. You know when you see a Corvette that's covered in bird crap? You know it's beautiful. And he went out of his way to say horrible things about my face because he felt I was being a little full of myself. So you just can't win, John.
I was just going to say, so what are you supposed to do? I mean, if you do try, but I think the culture is getting a corrective right now. And that's not going down so easily. You're right.
It's hard. It's painful.
How did it come up where you're, oh, I know. We had a guest on and she wrote an essay and a Facebook post in which she said that here's like 14 things guys can do to help women with the hashtag Me Too. And one of them was, don't introduce a female referencing their appearance. Don't say, here's the lovely Patty Vasquez.
It's weird. It is because you don't do that. I had a friend of mine say, I know, you know, I have a friend who always tells women how beautiful they are. And I said, why can't you tell them they're smart or funny? But I mean, I don't come and sit down across from you, John, and say, man, you are so smart, John. I mean, maybe you'd like that. But we don't sort of give men caveats like, I need to give you praise so that you feel better about yourself.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what typically happens to a guy. And the woman also noted that men will be given every sort of doctorate that they're due. So if it's Dr. Williams, they'll say, here's Dr. Williams, the brilliant Dr. Williams. But as often as not, they won't reference the academic pedigree of a female.
It's weird.
Which is, I don't understand that either. And this is just the one thing, though, that we are also struggling with, and that is that the intentions of all of these poorly speaking men are, in the cases I'm referencing, good.
Right. Absolutely.
They mean well.
Which is what's so confusing about it.
I don't know what to... I know. So now you say, okay, well, don't say that stuff. So I'm not going to say you're ugly, but now I think guys, and I'm not saying it's me, are now sort of at a loss for what to do, how to behave.
And I know that people are hesitant, now they're worried, and I guess the only thing I'd say to that is then we're saying it for a reason. It means that the years of it, the sort of compounded effect, has been negative. I'm sorry that it's hard for you guys, but we're coming from a place of like, please,
it's time. Finally. So
a bit of a relief.
And I wonder if anybody saw after Harvey Weinstein, because that was the first domino. That was the big domino,
oh, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And if it was, here they come, and it's going to come all the way down to Patty Vasquez at WGN or Lois Smith, who works at the local grade school. And you know what, guys? I'm tired of that crap. And it all started with Harvey Weinstein. I wonder if everybody saw that that was how this thing was going to trickle out.
I don't know, because it's so, it was so awful. I mean, the level to which he was doing this, I mean, sexual assault and violently.
Well, what's
so.
Your take on Al Franken?
So my take on Al Franken was, I woke up, are you just tired of waking up angry sometimes? I woke up.
I got to stop looking at the Trump Twitter account every morning,
yeah.
Because that's how I start my day.
I need to start a new habit of how I wake up. I need a half an hour before I start looking at things. I was really disappointed because I saw myself as that woman in that picture. There's a picture of me from a comedy tour I did. I thought everyone was smiling, and three guys around me were making lewd gestures in my direction. And I won't repeat it. I've said it on my show. And people, I had to explain myself, and then that got kind of weird. But I've been that woman. But what's come out afterwards is also sort of strange in that now they're finding other pictures of her. There's a video of her introducing Robin Williams, and he has his arm around her, and he's sliding it down. He's looking at her breasts, and at one point he slides it down, his hand down to her rear end. And when she leaves, after she introduces him, she embraces him, wraps her leg around him. So there was a lot of what seems like sexuality on these USO tours. So, you know, the line had to be very confusing for everybody. And Al was kind of, it seems like he was going along with all these sort of jokes that they were making. Was she asleep? Now there's, you know, controversy as to whether or not she was actually asleep. Was she staging it with him? And so that gets confusing, because then are we now going after the person who raised this issue and is, you know, claiming that she's a victim? It's hard, too, because you don't want to attack women by saying, what did you do to deserve this?
You're funny, because you mentioned that USO tour. Who are the notable women on the USO tour? It was Anne Margaret. It was Raquel Welch.
Right. On this tour was the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, too, wearing, like, hardly anything.
Sure. I mean, let's give the guys out there in the field something to whistle at. And the women were complicit in that. It's very strange.
So it gets very uncomfortable, I think. These are uncomfortable conversations.
Well, you came in here all aglow, because you got a big follow on your Twitter account.
I did get a big follow. I was listening to your first half hour about being at the Secretary of State, and at the same time, I was learning that I have been followed by @RealLindaCarter, who is Wonder Woman. And immediately I started checking to see, oh, does she just like have someone who starts following accounts? But she only follows 741, which is not a lot.
How many people follow Linda Carter?
75,000, something like that.
75,000, and she selected a very special, less than 1,000 people
right,
to follow back.
And she's a big hero of mine, not just because of, obviously, the iconic character of Wonder Woman, but she's a Latina and Scottish. So she's of a similar background. I'm Mexican and Irish. She is Mexican and Scottish. I did not know that when I was growing up, even.
And so do you tweet at her, or do you include her in hashtags or something?
No, I've never tweeted
at
her.
She found you out somehow.
Well, I've been hashtag, you know, believe women, and women of hashtag women of comedy, that kind of thing, supporting my fellow comics, because it has been a strange couple of weeks. Dozens of think pieces about what it's like to be a woman in comedy. So I've just been highlighting the people I know.
You probably have a lot of famous people, though, who follow you.
I don't have that many.
I don't have any.
Oh, do you want me? I'll tell them to follow you. Josh Charles follows me.
Who?
He's not even that famous.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sure it's great.
From The Good Wife. No, you'd see him, if you saw him, you'd know who he was.
From The Good Wife. Yes. I love The Good Wife.
Yes, he's her main love interest besides her husband, besides the governor.
Ah.
Yes.
Why does he follow you?
I don't know.
Because you're awesome?
I did tweet at him one time. Yes.
I see. Well, my biggest follow is Steve Bertrand.
Well, there you go.
Bertrand,
is that because he's tall? Is that your biggest?
You do follow me, don't you, Steve, on Twitter?
No, but I will one day.
I don't tweet that much. It's all, and I do that sort of lazy. It's linked to my Instagram and linked to my Facebook, so if it posts on one thing, it sort of goes across all platforms.
Plug your show. What are you going to do tonight?
Tonight we are going to have. I probably should take a look. I should have looked at that on the way in. I was trying to think of the topics we were going to talk about. But
are you going to do Jeffrey Tambor?
Yes, we'll definitely do Jeffrey Tambor. And I think that men are starting to worry. Is this a witch hunt? I guess it feels that way. You know, he just said that under these circumstances, I don't think I can do a good show. And that's sort of, it's devastating to people.
Well, the men who should worry, tell me if you agree, are the men who've done this. And the men who don't have to worry, this, I guess, is assuming that all the accusations will be fair, will be true. But if you didn't grope women, then you don't have to worry, because you've got nothing to worry about.
Exactly.
But here's the group, I guess, that is kind of going, well, did I grope her or not? We were kidding around. We were all laughing. She squeezed my butt.
Laughing doesn't count.
If you laugh, it doesn't count?
If she laughs? Just because she's laughing doesn't mean...
It's a defense mechanism.
Yeah, but I mean, then what percentage of the population, Steve, over the age of 43, are going to end up being guilty of some sort of inappropriate behavior? And I'm not kidding about that.
No, I know. I know you're not. And I'm just saying that the it's so subjective that you don't know how you could be doing something that you intend to not be offensive in any way, but
right,
you don't get to make the decision.
It seems right now like a lot of the good guys are asking the questions of women in their lives, and the women have to be honest with them. Did you know? And not in a harsh way or a critical way. Just
how
be very honest.
How would that go?
I had a friend actually message me and say, "Hey, when we were on that tour, because he saw my post regarding the Al Franken pictures, and I said I have been that woman." He said, "Hey, did I ever do anything that made you uncomfortable?" And I had to be honest with him, and I said, "Well, not during the tour, but afterwards. I thought we were friends, and you asked if you could come to my hotel room, and that's crossing the line. I don't know if you have
remember,
to ask.
You remember
I remember exactly. Yeah, and you can see in our messages the last time we exchanged notes or messages on Facebook was 2010, and it was because he said, "Can I come to your room with you?" You know, so. And but I was very honest with him,
but
I mean, I said, that's consensual, right?
Yeah, but
that
I mean, he's just saying, I want to go to your hotel room, and you know why.
Yes.
It's okay for him to ask that. It's not okay for him to force that.
Exactly. And that's what I told him. I said, that was uncomfortable for me, and that's why I haven't spoken to you, because
really?
We can't be friends anymore.
What, were you guys married at the time?
Or? I was married, yes.
Okay.
Oh, well, then, yeah.
Because
see,
otherwise,
do
I don't know what, I mean.
Right. How's a guy supposed to know?
And while we weren't, right, that he's taking his chances. He didn't do it while we were on the tour, and he was responsible for giving me my paychecks. You know, but on the same at the same time, he's the promoter of the tour I was doing.
Well, then that's a different dynamic entirely. It's 2:22. Okay, so then I don't know if this relates to all of that, but Steve, do you remember? I have to take a break here. I can finish this on the other side. What happened in Libertyville?
I do.
What did you do, John?
Are you thinking what I'm thinking, Steve? Okay, in just a minute. We don't have a lot of time to discuss this, and it's just as well. Patty Vasquez is in our studio. You'll hear her tonight.
Yes.
At two places. First at
Zany's on Wells.
At
8:30 p.m. and then right here at 11 p.m. till 2.
So when Steve and I were in Libertyville for the Hometown Voices tour stop, people wait afterwards and we all get our picture taken. We all put our arms around each other and then somebody takes the picture. And we do a lot of those and we love doing them. So Steve, is this what happened? So somebody went to take the picture and the picture didn't go. And so then my kind of standard line is, well, that's okay. I don't mind. And then I kind of hug the ladies a little tighter on either arm.
Okay.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, the way I remember it was you said, that's okay. This is, I don't mind this. And you used, it was a two-arm embrace of one of the women.
That's right. And then I reached, so I had one arm around her shoulder. And then I reached my other arm around to her shoulder and kind of give her a squeeze.
And
kind of a sideways hug.
I aged about 15 years.
And Steve went blank. He goes, "Oh, John, that's exactly what we don't do now." And I looked at him and I said, "You're kidding, right? I mean, yeah, I get it, but ha-ha." And he goes, "No, I'm not kidding.
There was no.
You should not do that."
Well, I can't, it's hard because you're in a sort of festive situation.
Well,
you're celebrating after a show.
John, you're talking like a man.
No.
Yeah,
no.
You
I'm
are.
I'm trying to. I'm.
She's
I'm
talking like the truth.
I'm trying to talk to John through this to sort of. Yes,
you're
perhaps
not done
now.
Yet.
No, but now with perspective and in that situation, you'll consider it next time.
I totally next time won't
see?
Give these ladies an extra squeeze, and they
don't give them any. See, and so Patty. So I said this to
why
John.
Why are you putting your hands over your eyes?
Oh no.
I said this to John Patty, and it's a great example because he meant absolutely nothing by it and
they
saw.
Always laugh. They love that John Williams and Steve Bertrand are giving him a little extra hug.
I did not, for the record.
Yes. Not Steve.
Not Steve.
All right. It's all right. I mean, it's all right now. Now that you know, right?
It just speaks to the fact that there are a lot of guys who have bad intentions and no idea of what they're doing.
I guess. I'm still not sure I did anything wrong.
I had to teach myself how to hug because of shows. I mean, people would come up to me and throw their arms around me. And Steve Cochran was the first one that noticed it. He goes, "Oh, you know, I can tell you don't want to hug when you say, oh, we're hugging. Oh, okay. I guess we're hugging."
Tonight, you're also going to talk about the 15 men exonerated in one day, the Chicago cops.
And perhaps hundreds more to come. We have an attorney who has
story.
Worked with the Chicago Police Department. So it's
Patty
incredible.
Vasquez on stage and on WGN Radio at
Thank
11
you.
O'clock tonight. Hey, thanks for coming. You should do this more often. I know you
May
do
I?
This with Steve.
Yes.
But I got time for you, Patty.
I would love to come in. Plus, it's a little more of a decent hour.
Yeah, it's easier
it's
to
so
do this
bright
show.
In here. It's very sunshine.
Hey, by the way, do you know who Carter Pfeiffer Madig is?
I feel like I should. Can I say
you don't know who Carter Pfeiffer Madig is?
I feel like I should. This is terrible. They're on hold.
He's
and
from
I'm
Chicago,
saying.
And he is the world champion.
Of?
Carter, what are you the world champion of?
Backgammon. Well, so I need to explain that a little. So the world championships are actually an easier event than I won. So I'm an international champion.
He's the international. Ooh. Well, that is, I think that's the same as the world champion, isn't it? Yeah.
No, there's the championships in Monte Carlo are only like 150 to 200 people, but this was over almost 400 people.
Wow.
In North Cyprus, it was it's a pretty incredible event.
Okay, so here's why I just wanted you to jump on with us, to promote the fact that you're going to be on with us tomorrow. Right, Carter?
I am going to be on with you tomorrow. We'll talk backgammon, and we'll play a little, and I'll bring a special board for you to play on.
Okay, so I just want to – I just need to say this because I totally respect what you do, comma. Okay. However, as a backgammon player myself, I've struggled with how much of it is skill and how much of it is chance, and I told my producer, I'll bet that over the course of five matches, I could win two of them. What do you think about that, Carter?
I think that's very possible. In fact, there's a huge battle in backgammon right now because people study, and there's a computer programs that you can try and play almost perfect what a computer would consider perfect backgammon.
Right.
And in the finals of the championships, I played one of the strongest computer player type people, Lars Trebolt from Denmark, who plays their error rates, and it's the lower error rate, the lower your error rate, the better your score.
Sure, yeah.
So he played a 2.6. So I started trying to play like him, and I was like, I'm not going to beat this guy like this. So I played like an idiot, played an 11.2, and I destroyed him.
I play really aggressively. I'm always putting people up on the wall. I'm always putting myself in vulnerable positions to set my opponent back.
We'll play one game where I will just let you hit a ton of men, and we'll
see what happens. Okay, so you're going to come by tomorrow, and we're going to play off the air because I don't want to take the time on the air to do it. And then we'll just talk more about who you are, what you do, and how you do it, and the results. We'll have the results on tomorrow's show, right?
Sounds good, yeah.
Carter, I'm really looking forward to you, and congratulations. It's nice to have an international champion in Chicago, and I'm looking forward to meeting you and playing tomorrow.
Well, I am looking forward to playing you, too, so it'll be a good time. And I'm also bringing my tournament director with me because she's a big fan, and she also – we have a backgammon club that's been in Chicago for 30 years. So.
Oh, wow. Tell her when she comes by that I'm not going to hug her, okay?
I know, and we're huggy people, so I feel like that's going to be a problem because we always hug. So we'll make sure they sign a paper, a waiver, or something. So.
Let other people initiate, John. Let other people initiate. This movie Lady Bird is out. This girl goes up to everybody and says, I'm a shaker.
Yeah, she does.
I'm a shaker.
Hey, listen, I'm a player, Carter. Let's talk tomorrow, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
There he goes. That's my new best friend, Carter Pfeiffer Maddig. And Patty, thanks for coming in. We'll listen for
you
tonight.
All right, I'm a shaker.
It's 2:31. This is WGN. It was so nice of Patty Vasquez to come by. You know, I hear her on with Steve.
Yeah.
I don't even get her name right. Elephant's in my ear going, Kez. So what's her name? What's Patty's last name? Patty Vas, what is it? What is her last name?
Vasquez.
What do I say? Quez?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she doesn't like that.
I'm sorry.
Well, she's up here really complaining. She's really going off on it.
I hear her on with Steve. I hear her in the evening, but we bumped into her in the hall the other day and said, well, why don't you make it a point to just remind folks of what you're doing on our show once in a while? And she said, sure. So every now and then we'll invite her to join us and kind of preview the things that she's doing on her program in the evening. Whatever your nighttime plans are, I think you would be wise to include Patty in them. But, you know, that whole conversation that we had with her, Steve, which really wasn't our intention, but there it was, I think is the sort of conversation that on the air and off the air, a lot of us are going to be having, and I guess should be having. What's your behavior? What's your intention? And what's the perspective, you know, that you should use to examine it? It's challenging, I would say, for all of us. It's also 2:42. You know, once in a while, we've talked to some folks from Country Financial about their Journey to Success program, where they help fund some organizations in the city of Chicago that maybe you don't know about. And when you discover them, you go, oh, wow, I'm so glad that's there. Why didn't I know about it? And here's an example of one of them. Brenda Palms Barber's in our studio. She's the founding executive director of the North Lawndale Employment Network. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the studio. Brenda, how are you?
I'm great, John. Thank you.
Do you agree with my introduction that there are a lot of organizations that are doing a lot of good, fighting the good fight all around Chicago, and we don't hear enough about them?
That's true.
How long has your organization been in existence?
We've been around for about 18 years. We were established back in 1999.
To do what?
To address the high unemployment experienced in the North Lawndale community. So what we learned through a study that we commissioned is that 57% of the adults in our community have had some involvement with the criminal justice system. And we knew that the high unemployment rate, which is essentially three times higher than the city of Chicago, currently it's 23.4%, had a lot to do with the fact that folks have been incarcerated.
57% of the people, of the adults in North Lawndale, have had some sort of run-in with the law.
That's correct.
When you discover that fact, are you mad at those people, or are you mad at the circumstances that got them to that place?
That's a great question. Absolutely, I see this as a part of a larger systemic issue, right? Because people would look at our community and think, well, if you're in North Lawndale, there's something wrong with you. But that's not the case. I think that oftentimes there are poor choices. It's a community that has limited options, and people need to survive. And so they make poor choices that often lead them to having to live behind bars.
So what do you do? How do you help people find employment?
Well, we do it a number of ways. We have a program called U-Turn Permitted. So it's like a street sign. So we believe that people can turn their lives around. So our intent is to equip them with skills they need, help them think about the way that they were thinking, because there's a certain way of criminogenic thinking that leads a person to make a decision to make poor choices, right? So we have to understand and unpack what that is. And so we have a cognitive-based training program called U-Turn Permitted. And then we also focus on restoring a person's self-worth.
Are these people interested in that? I mean, are they interested in a cognitive program that's going to help me think better?
You know, we don't tell them that. We don't tell them that. But what we do is say, you know, you got to think a little bit about what led to your decisions here.
And own that.
And then own it. And then more importantly, you know, prison is all about sort of stripping a person of their self-worth. You're a number, and you're there to serve your time. So a big part of our work is to restore that sense of self, right, and self-worth.
Your organization then funded or created something called Sweet Beginnings, right?
We did.
And Patricia Jackson is here. She's the Assistant General Manager of Sweet Beginnings. Patricia, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Thank you, sir. I'm great.
What's Sweet Beginnings?
Sweet Beginnings is a job where convicted felons can go to feel like they can do something that they haven't done before. Sweet Beginnings is a program where you become a part of a team.
What do they make?
So we make honey and honey-infused skincare products.
Is that what I have here?
That is what you have there, sir.
Honey and honey-infused skincare products.
All natural.
Are they for men or women?
They're unisex.
Unisex? And are they, so I just opened up the Bee Love, B-E-E, get it, honey, B-E-E Love body cream.
Mm-hmm.
This is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The packaging in this gift box is really pretty. It's got the shaved paper in there and then these ornamental jars. They're easy to open up. The product is looks like skin cream. When you it looks delicious. I want to taste it.
Yeah.
But it also has kind of a soft honey scent, would you say?
I would.
It's not overpowering, but you don't want that on a body cream.
No, you
do
not.
Then I put it on and it's very, this is going to sound stupid, creamy. But how else would you describe this cream?
I would describe it as nourishing.
Yeah.
It's healthy for your skin. You know, when our skin finds something that's all natural and healthy for us, it absorbs it really quickly.
What is it made of, this stuff?
We have some shea butter, some neem root, comfrey, what is it?
And there's honey.
Exactly.
Honey is in all of the products that you sell, right?
Yes.
So we have the what's this Bee Love Polish and Glow Honey and Brown Sugar Scrub?
Gosh, yes.
Oh, wow.
This is like a bath scrub?
It is, sir. It's to relieve the dead skin from your feet. It's also to replenish, hydrate, and moisturize as well.
Then you have the Ultimate Body Balm. What does this do?
Oh, that is my favorite. It's for your sore and tense muscles. It has an invigorating smell. It's made with eucalyptus mint, and it just calms you and works on your deep, sore, and tense muscles.
Oh, really?
It's really good if you're a gardener, if you like to work with your hands.
Rub this into your arms and back or neck?
Yes, and it just really helps dry, like dry feet as well.
Really?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Maybe a little more intense version of the body cream. And then what's this, the buzz?
All natural, raw, local honey.
That's the honey.
Really, where are you making the honey? Or where are the bees making the honey? Where are the bees?
Right in the back of our apiary. We have an apiary in the back of our production area.
In North Lawndale?
In North Lawndale.
3726.
You got
West
an apiary
Florida.
In North Lawndale?
There are bees in North Lawndale.
So do you, import them? Or are they, you know, Illinois sourced? Where are the bees from?
we are able to work with, we source them from a variety of places. And so we have picked up bees out of Wisconsin, which is oftentimes the closest to what we work with because they're familiar with the weather, and they have to be hardworking and quite resilient to be
a friend of mine
in our
has
weather.
Hives. A friend of mine has hives in Wisconsin, but then you got to put on it would seem to me like the thing growing tomatoes. If you're going to grow, you don't grow bees, but if you're going to have bees and make them produce honey and then generate products, you got to have a bee expert, don't you?
You do.
We do.
So you got a bee expert?
We do.
You
have a professional beekeeper, Mr. Christian.
And then how many people does he work with?
He works with two or three other people. So it's really two right now, and Mr. Jermaine Benson and Mr. Parrish Grace.
How many people are involved in the whole production line of all of these products?
We have a team of seven.
Seven. Right. Yes. I'm surprised it's not more. I mean, this seems to me like there's a lot going on here.
There is a lot going on. And what it is that we have cohorts or four cohorts per year of 90 days. And so we have 7 to 10 individuals per cohort. So anywhere from 25 to 40 individuals will work in Sweet Beginnings for a year.
For a year. And what's the value to them to making these products?
The value is that many of them, after incarceration, have had limited work experience. Some of them have not had legal work experience. And so it's an opportunity to reacclimate back into society through this kind of work.
Some of these guys maybe haven't had a 9-to-5 job for a year for a very long time.
That's right.
This provides that.
This helps them with that.
It does.
And we also have four apiaries. I'll just mention we have two in North Lawndale. We also started the first apiary in partnership with O'Hare Airport. So we actually have bees at O'Hare, and they're fabulous. We have that's our largest apiary. And then the second is with our partnership with Cook County Forest Preserve.
This came wrapped in a bow, as a gift. This would be a Christmas gift. This would be more than a stocking stuffer, I would say. This would be a great gift.
Yes.
How do people buy these?
On our website, belovebuzz.com.
BeLoveBuzz, belovebuzz.com.
Yes.
And I'll be ordering it, and then you ship it to me.
That's right.
And that's helping these men and women in North Lawndale.
That's correct.
I'm going to buy a lot of this stuff. What does this gift box cost of the four things?
That is our spa collection with a 6-ounce honey inside.
Yeah.
So we have a spa collection with honey. We have one without honey. We have a luxury bath. We have a pure necessity, a nourishing balm.
How much does that?
Yeah, shoot me a number, lady. That's what I need. Here.
I am sorry about that. So our spa collection with honey is $65.
$65.
Yes, sir. The spa collection without honey is $59.
Got it.
Our luxury bath right now is $38. And we have a nourishing balm for $14 and a pure necessity for $16.
Do you have a hair product, too?
Not yet.
Because one of my friends put it in his hair, and he thought it was really great. But this lotion, I'm loving the sensation.
I see you steady putting it on your head.
I am, because I have, it's November in Chicago. It's going to be this way for 6 months. Okay, belovebuzz.com. Order them now, not only because they're great products and gifts, but, oh, by the way, it's really going to help some people and two terrific organizations. Ladies, both, thank you for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
And nice job, Country Financial, for also being a financial supporter for
the North
Lawndale Employment Network and then Sweet Beginnings, makes the Bee Love Buzz products. Rokan's in the studio. Anna DeVlantis, too. Hi, campers.
Hello, John. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
Hello. I have returned.
Rose back from an extended couple of days off.
Yeah.
Right?
Was
Enjoy
it
your
medical
time?
Or recreation?
No,
it's always medical, isn't it?
Well, right. There's nothing that isn't medical with me. But I like to, after having any kind of a slight procedure, I like to come in and then claim how strong I am. This was a case where I was scheduled to be on vacation for a couple of days. I was going to do
So did you have some procedures done while you were
I
out?
I didn't. I thought about it. I called.
Stop by the doctor. Just, hey, what's up?
Yeah, exactly.
Got some time. Hang out in the waiting room.
Exactly.
Rokan is still in the waiting room.
I'm here. Is the doctor still here? You know, that's why doctors have back doors to their offices.
I know they do.
It was like you think it's just it started with my family. I believe. I think my mother was the first patient. She was patient zero for the back door for the office.
So,
the doctor's no longer with us. You know, so
really, he's just here.
What's your atopic today, campers?
Mark. The Mark Sapelsa is going to join us? Is
yes,
that really
he
true?
Is.
Yeah,
he's got an investigative report, and you kind of was doing some research in the alley behind your house. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
So
I do.
You should be somewhat worried about this.
I am concerned. Maybe this is going to be it. Maybe it's going to be this could be the end of my career. And then Todd Stroger wants to be the county board president.
I am so happy to hear this.
He's going to join us at 3:40.
He's coming on the show.
Todd and I have a history. We go way back. We're best buds. Don't interview him. Let me have him tomorrow.
No.
I'll interview him tomorrow.
Sorry.
Tell him I'm going to call him tomorrow.
Yes.
You can call in with a question.
I don't think it'll be a long interview.
Oh, come on. I love me some Todd. Don't you love some Todd?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not.
Yeah, we'll see.
Are you going to yell at him? Be nice to him.
I'm going to be very, I'm gonna be respectful. I've talked to him before.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to know why he, I mean, the primary question is why does he want to do this?
I know.
It was not a great run first time around.
And the job looks so thankless and impossible.
Yeah, right.
Do you want to be county
with that
board
budget?
President? What does it pay? I'll bet he needs the money. I mean, I'll bet he wants a six-figure job. What's county board chair pay? I'm going to guess.
Know.
I'll bet $150,000, $200,000, mm-hmm. something
it's
like
probably,
that.
By the time we're done, it's probably $750,000. We don't know. But it's it's a powerful position. You know, it was one of those hidden, the county board was one of those things that nobody ever talked about, nobody looked at. George Dunn ran it like a fiefdom for decades.
So mysterious. $170,000 is what Tony Preckwinkle makes in that position.
I think the commissioners make half that, though.
The highest paid employees, if you go up to the healthcare CEO, they make $500,000. You go down to the surgeons and the internal medicine people, they get $450,000, $444,000. Yeah. And then,
nice click search, Anna. That was pretty good.
She's very good at that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
Boom, boom, boom.
So that's all coming up in the first hour. So I stare. And then Ed Obradovich will be here at 4:40.
Oh, my gosh. He was on fire after the game.
I was there.
Oh, was it great?
Was it great?
Well, was it great just to be commiserating with everybody? Did you like being there?
In typical Rokon fashion,
mm-hmm.
I was so angry at the end, I almost kicked the glass out of the skybox I was sitting in. That is how bad this was. This is bad.
I'm surprised that Ed is alive after the Green Bay game because he almost died on the air.
Oh. Well, let me tell you, that I think that this is, again, Detroit and Green Bay are the two longest standing rivalries in Bears history, and two of the longest standing rivals, longest standing rivalry in the NFL. This is
Well, listen, Ro, have a really good show. I'm going to check out. I know you got a lot to do.